Back at it with you on Connecticut Today, middle of the month style, Tuesday, December 15th, 2020, as the coronavirus vaccine is rolled out to and through hospitals in Connecticut. We talk to a biomedicine expert from the medical school at Quinnipiac University in Hamden who chimed in on the development of the coronavirus vaccines and what's ahead over the next 2 months. Another point of view here regarding the coronavirus vaccine. I guess it'll be vaccines now, because word is the FDA has given the preliminary thumbs up to the Moderna vaccine. And joining us right now to talk about the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, and something going on locally where you can get more information is Professor Dr. Lisa Kuchara, professor of biomedical sciences, Quinnipiac University, has a long resume in this sort of stuff. Her specialties include biotechnology, immunology, microbiology, molecular biology, and pathogenic microbiology, which, like most of my guests, makes her a heck of a lot smarter than your dopey host. Professor, good afternoon. Paul here. How are you?
Hi. Thank you. Very good.
I appreciate the time. Thanks. Well, let me get your initial thoughts. What are you thinking so far with the the distribution of the Pfizer vaccine? And word, Professor, that the Moderna vaccine is also kind of around the 94-95% effective rate. What do you think?
I'm very excited about this. I'm optimistic about it, that we have indeed started vaccinating with Pfizer, and Moderna is likely to get approval based on everything I've read and the preliminary reports so far coming from the FDA and looking at their safety data. So I am optimistic. It's a kind of a light that started at the end of the tunnel. It's certainly not a magic light switch that's going to make everything better by Friday, but it's something that we're starting to see a good phase implemented.
I have family members and friends who work in the biopharma industry, Professor, and boy, they tell me, and I was just chatting with them on and off about this, boy, 20, 30 years ago, the speed of what we just did, that would have been unheard of, right?
Yes. So certainly everything is faster nowadays. If you think about, you know, it took us many years to, say, discover even what was the cause of a particular pandemic in the past or even a new infection. And now we can figure it out very quickly. Within 5 days of kind of knowing about this virus, we were able to sequence it and be able to start, you know, implementing, you know, a vaccine. And people think, well, that's really fast. But probably some of your listeners have done things like Ancestry or 23andMe or those similar things where they're getting their DNA assessed and their genetic material assessed as well. So it is something that wasn't possible 20 years ago, and it is possible now with technology.
And I was just going to ask you, what makes it so possible for what is called gene sequencing, and what is that? Is the whole computer thing now and just better hard technology making those things easier?
Yes, so we can do things, you know, faster now where we can actually be able to identify the actual code. So similarly, our organisms have, you know, when we have letters in our alphabet, they have codes, and we're able to be able to decipher those codes pretty quickly now. So as I said, within 5 days of kind of identifying this as one of the coronaviruses, we were able to sequence it and know that identification. We do it similar in a crime scene. We do it similarly for Ancestry. We can get that information back really quickly. So it was something that used to, you know, take a lot of time to be able to get those results back, and now we have, you know, computers, like you said, and machines that can actually do this very fast now.
Did I read somewhere where, and I may be off by a digit or two, but for example, the code for coronavirus is 100,000 different combinations or characters? Did I read that, Doctor, correctly?
It basically has the ability to encode for 29 different proteins. And so what we're looking for in the vaccine is one of those proteins is what we're looking at. So the protein that makes the spike protein is the code that we're looking for. So if you were infected with this virus, you'd have that code in your body and you'd be making 29 proteins, and some of those make us sick. We're just looking to encode one of those proteins, that spike protein, and then basically it gives our immune system the ability to recognize it, so when we encounter that virus in its entirety, we already know exactly how to be able to take care of it.
Dr. Lisa Kuchara is the guest, professor of biomedical sciences at Quinnipiac University in the med school there. Professor, talk a little bit about how this Pfizer vaccine works, because from what I read, this is kind of different, right? This was an RNA tacked here. How does that work?
So, and that's part of the, you mentioned the speed. So an RNA vaccine is something different than what is typically we think of on our vaccine schedule with measles and mumps and other things. Those take a lot longer to develop because they involve using the virus itself, either a live weakened strain or a killed strain. So it takes time to be able to kind of work through that. This is an RNA vaccine. So what it does is it basically has that genetic material, the RNA, that encodes for that spike protein. So it's a pretty simple vaccine. There's not a lot of ingredients in it. Like, you know, we don't have to have preservatives. We don't have to have things in it like we might have to have in other types of vaccines. So when we take the vaccine, we're basically making that one spike protein. Our immune system recognizes that protein and makes antibodies to it, and then those antibodies will protect us in the future. So it's something that the technology itself has been around for cancer and other types of therapies for a while, but it'll be our first approved one on our vaccine market.
What is your guess, Doctor, regarding the longevity here, or the protection, assuming that a healthy person with no underlying comorbidities gets both shots? Say for a middle-aged person, what's the literature saying?
So we really don't have that data yet, right? We haven't had enough people that have been vaccinated for a long enough period of time that we know how long this is going to last. We really don't even know after infection how long it's going to last, right? We have data for, you know, the past 12 months, say. But we can look back at natural infection for this virus and know that immunity after natural infection for coronaviruses does not tend to last long. We don't know if this vaccine will be like some vaccines and last longer. So if you get the tetanus vaccine, it lasts for about 10 years, and then we need a booster. Will it be similar to that? That would be great if that was the case. Will it be something like measles and you get your two doses and it's lifelong? Probably not, because of the nature of coronaviruses. So we really don't know the answer to that yet. And we don't know if it'll be different. I know one person asked me, well, if we have this great two vaccines, why is anybody else still continuing to make vaccines? So it could very well be that a vaccine that is made in 5 years maybe will have longer lasting immunity than this one. So people still want to be able to study that and figure out, okay, we need this vaccine now, but what vaccine will actually induce the longest lasting immunity for us? And hopefully this will be one that will be, like many vaccines, better than immunity after infection.
Despite the just explosion that we see in the infections around the world and around the U.S., I did hear from a medical expert on a show a few weeks ago commenting on the overall, though, the mortality rate, Doctor, continues to be basically 65 plus. And this doctor was saying that we may be seeing in this second wave kind of a sort of a weakened COVID, which may be weakened a bit, but in on the other hand, is far more infectious. What are your thoughts on that?
That's true of a lot of germs. So if you're a really successful germ, and we think about it from being a human, but if you think about it from the point of view of being a germ, all you want to do is make more copies of yourself and infect people. So if you did it really quickly, if you're a germ that just kills people instantly, you're not going to spread very fast or very far. So successful viruses and germs in general tend to be ones that are much better at spreading and don't have as likely, to be able to kill you, and therefore that's how they spread, far and wide to everybody. Something like people might be familiar with Epstein-Barr virus.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't kill very many people, and therefore 90% of us have been infected with it. But there's two parts to that mortality, too, is that we certainly have gotten a little bit more knowledge and we understand a little bit more, and we've done better at the within the medical community itself as well.
Finally, I see in one of your papers has to do with vaccine myths and the unfortunate consequences of those. Do you think some of this early skepticism that we're seeing, is that going to fade away? Do people just want to see people get this vaccine maybe and say, oh, okay, there weren't any crazy side effects, maybe I'll get it?
Yes, so definitely, there's been a lot of publicity about the virus, about the pandemic, about the vaccine, and there's been a lot of, even the name Operation Warp Speed, people are hesitant. What does that mean as far as that? It means the red tape has been cut. It doesn't mean the safety, you know, has been cut or anything has been sped up. It just means they've kind of streamlined, like they pre-purchased the vaccine and saying, okay, if it works, this is what we're going to do. But I think that overall publicity has given a lot of, cause for pause. I mean, people say, well, wait a minute, you know, it's happened so fast. Is this something that is safe? It has gone through phase one, phase two, phase three trials. And we know that some of the vaccines had to stop at phase two and say, oh, the efficacy isn't quite as good as I want. We're going to go back and we're going to reformulate it. So certainly there's a lot of myths that are out there. And it's our job when we, you know, seek out information to seek out information from people that are reputable. You know, don't just take what you see in the social media at first glance. Talk to a scientist, talk to your healthcare provider, talk to somebody that actually can give you correct information. It's good to ask questions. It's good to be hesitant, but make sure you're getting your facts from somebody who can give you accurate facts.
Wait a minute. There's false information on social media? You're kidding. You're kidding, Professor. Because it's on the internet, it's not true. Boy, it must. I got to tell you something. Finally, as we wrap up here, you can admit it. Go ahead. A little therapy here. You people in biotech and biomed, it must drive you crazy, some of the stuff you see.
Yes, it can be quite interesting sometimes. Sometimes you want to laugh or do worse, but you have to just take people and meet them where they're at. Sometimes it's really, there's a lot of misinformation out there, but I did have a woman tell me she would never take a vaccine because it contains chemicals and that there is not one chemical in her entire body. And I'm thinking, we're a carbon-based life form. How could there be no chemicals in her body? So, yes, there are times where you kind of just shake your head, but you have to meet them where they're at and take them seriously, respectfully, and try to address their concerns, and then hopefully they'll understand the facts and be able to make an informed decision about it.
Good thoughts. Dr. Lisa Kuchara, she's a professor of biomedical sciences at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Professor, thank you. We appreciate the time. We really do. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Governors wanted to make it very clear, you know, that the state is prepared. And I have to start by saying, you know, we've been watching this, and, you know, there's a number of times we look at storms and we say, is it really going to be that serious? And all the indicators right now are showing that this thing could drop anywhere from 12 to 18 inches on us, and it could be a heavy, steady snowfall that's coming at us Wednesday night into Thursday. So from a DOT end, I've had to assure the governor that we have over 1,300 operators and supervisors on the state. We have 634 state plows and 18 industrial loaders. We've got materials, equipment, spare parts outside here. Maybe later you want to go and take a look. We'll show you how we take the salt and we mix it, that brine solution. We've already begun that. So if you were driving in today, you probably saw some of the roads have that whitish blue U to it that turns around and sets it up for us for when we're going to go forward. We're taking advantage of the dry conditions we have today. You can do that up to 3 days before, so we're hoping that we're going to be able to do that. We're also monitoring, and we're in partnership with our sister states, looking at what it is that going to affect the truck traffic and whether or not we have to make decisions on that. So I'm going to tell you to stay tuned on that as we watch and we monitor with them whether or not we have to start putting the restrictions out. I have to give you an update that Metro North just called that the two Waterbury buses in the afternoon, the one at 4:48 and 6:48, they're already going to suspend them. They already anticipate the problems, and they don't want to have people get caught up there in terms of what's going on. So right now, the regular trains are going to continue to go. We will continue to keep utilizing you as our voice pieces out there to turn around and make sure that We're getting the message out to the public as clearly as we possibly can. And with that, I'd like to introduce my boss, the governor of the state of Connecticut, and the person that constantly is asking us, are we ready for this? And I want you to know that the men and the women of the DOT are ready for this storm coming in. Governor?
Hey, thanks, Joe. Yeah, the DOT is ready. You know, as I've been saying for about 12 months, you know, hope for the best and prepare for the worst. And this could be 12 to 18 inches. It could hit pretty hard in a little more than 24 hours. And as some of the guys in there just give me a briefing saying they're showing up tomorrow morning, and they don't know when they're going to be heading home because you got to go round the clock when it's storming like it could be. I feel like I have some messages. I repeat them depending on what the event is, but they're often the same. One is stay safe, stay home. To everybody that doesn't have to travel starting late Wednesday night when it starts snowing, don't. Let the amazing guys from DOT do their work. If you're on a road, you're on a hill, you spin out, you slow down, that can stop a snowplow, that can create traffic, that can take a guy off the battlefield when we need them working around the clock. Stay safe, stay home. You know, Joe just reminded me everything we do on a regional basis. One of the first things that he does is he reaches out to New York, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. And together, one of the first things they'll decide is what you do with the big tractor-trailer trucks, since they're the ones that can really snarl up traffic, because we want to avoid that. We're working hard to track our vaccines as they come in by truck and make sure they can work around the store and make sure the vaccinations can continue to happen with as little pause as we can possibly muster. CT Travel Smart, I was just told. You want to know what the latest is, what the updates, what roads open, what roads we got to work on. CT Travel Smart is where you go. You'll get regular updates there. I'll be getting regular updates there as well. And sorry, kids, I in the old days used to have a snow day coming up, and now it will be a virtual learning day. One of the many ways that our world has changed. So get the computer logged on because you'll still be learning for a little bit longer. Anyway, I think our team is ready, Joe. I think the DOT is ready. 600 plus snow plows. 100 guys are out with COVID, Joe just told me. So we got the contractors ready to back up as well. They're starting to put down the salt mixture, right now, so we can anticipate as the snow begins to aggregate in 28 hours or something and get a head start on this. And if I had one message for you, it's the same message I've been repeating for a while. Stay safe, stay home, don't get out on the roads if you don't absolutely have to. And that's how we'll be able to get through this and be back to something closer to normal by Friday. Thanks, everybody.
The only other thing I'll add is that we warn people all the time that, you know, if you go out there on the road, please stay well behind the plows. We would prefer you not be out there. We've got to keep these roads open. We've got to keep these roads safe. And when you get stuck out there, it pulls critical personnel that we, the men and women that are out there trying to clear the roads, from doing their job to trying to deal with the incidents that are out there. This is a serious storm that's coming in. We want to make sure that that message is out there loud and clear. So thank you. Because of the people that have COVID. And yes, we do have, unfortunately, we've been hit very hard with the COVID. We have over 100 employees that have tested positive. I have almost double that number that are waiting for tests. And right now what we've had to do is we've always used contractors to supplement on a major storm, but we're now engaging a lot more contractors because we know that we are going to need them with a storm like this. And it's our way of augmenting the force that's there. They work with us. I didn't get a chance to say it, or I forgot to say it before, but this year we also have the ability with GPS to monitor where all the trucks are and how we're doing with the roads that are out there. So we have a constant exchange of information that tells us how the roads are going and how we're able to keep up with the storm. But the direct answer is it's not unique for us to have used contractors, but this time here it's much more needed than it's ever been in the past.
In the fact that many people are working from home and have the ability to do so and will stay off the road.
I would turn and say to you that what we have seen lately, and it kind of works both ways. Yes, we are almost up to pre-COVID levels on our highway, but we're at pre-COVID levels while the people that are using the trains to go into New York are down 87%. So if that volume comes up, that directly impacts. So knowing right now that we're already carrying about 80% of what would have been a pre-COVID load out there doesn't mean that we have the luxury we had when this thing first began and our highway was way down around 40%. But what you are right about is, yes, a lot of people, a lot of companies, including our own, has learned how to do work from home using computers and teleworking. And I'm hoping that the governor's message that if you can stay home, you stay home, and that you're able to still be able to be active, be able to do your job, because our world has changed in terms of being able to do that.
On the trucks, how that works.
You know, you want all the secrets to how we go and make things work here. What's going on right now, we're going through this right now, and we will have a lot more information, and we'll give it out as it comes in. We've now put it out there. We always have the ability that we have. If you ever take a look at the front of the truck, then they'll show you. There's a little, sorry about that. There's a little, I would call it a receiver that is constantly feeding information that tells the driver not only what the temperature of the road is, what the temperature of the air is, so we can start seeing where the transition is. It'll also tell us how much do we want to take of the snow off the road. Because if we know it's going to freeze later on, you don't want to go all the way down to the surface. You want to leave a little bit so that way there you can get that up. What we've added on this time is that we've put it there that the truck is going to be constantly communicating back with our headquarters. I'll be in a better position after a couple of storms to tell you how efficient it is, but we're looking forward to it because it'll let us know where all of our drivers are at any given time, let us know where they are on the roads, and that way there it also, we have 11,000 miles of road that we maintain out there. So there's a lot of work out there that we have to keep an eye on.
With contractors filling in, are they driving the state trucks or do they have GPS
on there? No, they drive their own trucks, and I do not, are they on the GPS system yet, Paul? No, it'll be a while. Some of the other states, I was just on a call, and that's why I needed to check with Paul Rizzo, by the way, is in charge of all this for the DOT. Some of the other states now have had regular contractors, and they're doing the same thing. They're putting that same GPS technology into their trucks as well, so we can monitor the contractors' trucks at the same time. This is our first year with it. We'll see how it goes. If it goes very, very well, that may be something we'll be requiring in the future.
In touch with them now.
Basically, they are constantly on a radio system that they can call in, and we've got telephones out there. You know, our world is running with telephones right now. So we have a way of talking to every driver that's out there and monitoring what's going on with them.
I got a quick question. Governor Lamont, do you have an idea of how many vaccines you could potentially be receiving over the next couple of days? Do you have an idea about that or any information about that?
I think we were scheduled to receive 32,600 this week, and I think most of them are arriving by the end of tomorrow.
Are you concerned at all that the weather will impact delivery of these vaccines?
I think we can manage the delivery. I understand that public health and public safety are working on that. Whether everybody's going to get vaccinated on Friday or Thursday, we'll see.
People may have a tough time getting to work together.
5.98 was the positivity, by the way. I just took a look at that number, which under 6%, as I like to think. So we've been at as high as, I think, 8.6, 7.6 a few days ago, 6.6, 6. So that's a trend, but it's too short to extrapolate from.
Governor, where will you be riding out the storm?
Right here in Hartford in the residence.
For a travel ban at this time, you'll wait and see how bad it gets?
I'll take the lead from Joe on that. I think they'll be giving us some updates on a regular basis.
Thank you.